This is the Practical Teaching Tips Podcast. I am your host, Richard James Rogers, high school science and chemistry teacher and author of the award-winning book, The Quick Guide to Classroom Management. Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode on the Practical Teaching Tips podcast. I am your host, as always, Richard James Rogers. And today I would like to focus on the feedback process that should happen when we have gone through exam-style questions with our students, past paper questions, tests and assessments. Now, I have made a podcast episode before and written a blog post about how to use past papers with our students, but I haven't really focused on the feedback process that happens after the students have sat those papers or done those questions. So I'd like to really hone in on that today. So how do we deal with this then? When students have completed, let's say, a really big test or a big assessment or some past paper questions, what do we do to offer feedback? How should we offer feedback? Well, first of all, the absolute golden rule of all tests, assessment, past paper questions, exam style questions is you must have an official mark scheme. You absolutely need that, whether that's a rubric in English or a series of answers that have been provided by the exam board in science or mathematics or geography. Whatever it is, you must have an official mark scheme. Do not set any test, any assessment, any exam style question if you do not have the official mark scheme. It will cause you so many headaches to deal with that if you don't have the official answers, because you'll have to make up answers and you'll have discrepancies between students, of course, always when they're answering questions, and it's going to create an awful lot of work for you as the teacher, and you won't be providing accurate feedback to those students. So you must have an official set of answers, even if in the worst case scenario you have written those answers yourself and that's what you're sticking with, that the students must respond, that's how they must respond. So always have that. Now, once you've got an official mark scheme, how do you use that to help students? I think a good idea, and what I often do, is I'll give the test papers back to the students after I've marked them, and that will come with a score. Maybe it's out of 100 or out of 20, whatever it might be. I'll convert that to a percentage, and then of course you want to be converting that to your schools or your exam boards or whatever the official mark scheme tells you is their leveling or grading system. So for example, I teach the IB diploma. That goes from level 1 to 7. And in chemistry, approximately 80% is a level 7, for example. In IGCSE, mathematics is in the subject I teach, in the exam board I work with, they still have A star to G grades, whereas IGCSE chemistry is level 1 to 9. So this can be really confusing for students. So you really have to make it clear what the percentage was, what the raw score was, and also what the level or grade for that paper is. And following on from that, grade boundaries as well. What are the grade boundaries for that paper? So those four things are absolutely crucial. And it's surprising and amazing how many students do not receive all four of those elements of exam level feedback. So once again, that's the raw score, the percentage, the level or grade, and the grade boundaries. That needs to be fully transparent, and the students need to know that. Secondly, share the mark scheme with the students. Once I've given the papers back to my students and they're marked, I don't think the teacher needs to be making corrections for the students. in my early days of teaching, I would spend so much time just writing out essentially the official answer from the mark scheme in red pen or green pen on each paper. It would take so long. It's much more efficient, and actually it's better for the students if they have to make their own corrections to their papers. If they take their own coloured pen, it should be a different colour to what they've answered the paper in. If it's digital, get them to highlight the correct answer or type it in a different colour, or write it in a different colour on their iPad or something. But they should be looking at the mark scheme, looking at their answers, and trying to figure out why they did not achieve the full marks for that question. Now, the benefit of this for you as the teacher is it's less marking time for you, but it's also more productive in-class time for you, because instead of just giving back papers with lots of your comments on, which is not entirely helpful because the students have to read those comments and try to understand them, and not every student will read every comment. What the method of getting the students to correct their papers does is it allows you to walk around the room, have those one-to-one conversations, make sure the students understand the mark scheme. And what you'll find as well is if you sit in maybe a consultation area of the room or sit at your desk and you just invite students to come to you one at a time if they have questions about the mark scheme, that is really helpful because then you can clarify any misconceptions. You can make the students really clear about where they may have lost marks. And you can also make key language and key words and key definitions really clear to the students as well. Following on from that, you should always as well go through the whole paper with the whole class if possible. So what I will do is once I've given the papers back to the students, they've got their score, they know the grade boundaries, they know the grade, they know the percentage, they've corrected their papers, they've made corrections, then I will show the paper on my screen, on my smart board, and I will go through every question, question by question, so that the students are really, really clear about how to answer every question. Now, you might be listening to this and thinking, wow, that's a long process. That would take a long time. Yes, it can take up considerable time, a lesson or two perhaps, but it is time very well spent because that level of deep feedback is what's going to help your students improve. Absolutely. And if you look at John Hattie's research, and you look at all of the elements that make up effective teaching and learning, feedback is way up there at number one on John Hattie's list of I forget the official name, but there's something like impact actions or something like that. And feedback is number one. And I totally agree with the research because in my experience, which now covers almost two decades, it is that feedback process that really gets the students understanding where they went wrong and how to improve. And the way we deliver that feedback has got to be multifaceted. We start with the scores, the levels, the grade boundaries, the percentages. We provide the mark schemes, get the students to correct their own papers. Once they've done that and you've talked to students who have questions, who don't understand the mark scheme, for example, then you go through each question with the whole class. And you'll find that when you do that, the clarity of the content really, really increases for those students who need help. And they will make big improvements if this is a regular process you're going through. Now, there are other ways to do it. I don't recommend peer assessment for high stakes tests and exam style questions. It should be the teacher that marks those. However, if you've got a nice group and you've got peer groups within the group, you can potentially ask students to swap their papers once they've got them back and correct each other's papers. There's little benefit to doing that really though, because essentially it's the students the students should really be looking at their own answers and correcting their own answers. So I think self-assessment and self-correction is more valuable when it comes to high-stakes tests and assessments. Also, there's automated assessment that happens a lot these days. So if the test is an online test, you can get your students to receive the official feedback from the software and create some kind of analysis or reflection. And that can be done actually with any assessment, whether it's online or it's on-site, it's in the classroom, it's on paper. Getting your students to create some kind of reflection, a reflection on what they did well, so their strengths, and where they went wrong, their weaknesses, and their targets for improvement. And if each student has their own Google Sheet or Google Doc or some kind of journal where they can record their targets, they can record their reflections, they can record their strengths and weaknesses for each test, and they can record their scores, there's so many benefits that come from that. First of all, it removes any argument or any conflict when it comes to reporting grades to parents, or it removes any lack of clarity when it comes to where the student is at and where they're going. But what it also does is it encourages students to constantly think about their targets for improvement and to reflect upon themselves. And it reiterates the message that we learn from our mistakes. Now, I often say in these podcast episodes that the phrase "learn from your mistakes" is quite a loaded statement because it doesn't give you the full message. We can only learn from our mistakes, and our students can only learn from their mistakes if they remember their mistakes. Now, they're only going to remember their mistakes if they have to get into the habit of journaling their mistakes and looking back over what they did wrong in the past on a regular basis, and then using that as a framework to create targets for the future. So think about how you could do this. In the past, I've had little stickers that the students have put in their books, and they've written a grade, target, reflection on those. Nowadays, I tend to use technology a lot more. So I mentioned G Suite before, Google Sheets, Google Docs are really good. Google Slides can be used for students to create their own journal. Just make sure they're sharing that with you so you can access it as well. And also, things like students maybe having their own special notebook to record their learning journey in a particular subject, especially when they're approaching the final exams. I've written a very popular blog post about learning journals and how they're very much underutilized in schools, and I think it's about time, and it's high time, that many teachers started utilizing these a lot more, getting the students into the habit of thinking about how they think, which is metacognition, first of all, but reflecting constantly on how they've done, where they're at, where they're going to. That's an essential life skill, isn't it? We all need to reflect in life, actually, on where we're at, where we're going, and what the steps are to get there. And that's really the final part of that target setting, isn't it? Students should be able to articulate the steps they need to take in order to reach their target. And unfortunately, again, few schools are doing this. Few schools are encouraging their students to take the action of reflecting on where they're at, reflecting on their weaknesses, formulating targets, but then also outlining the steps needed to reach that next target. And we're going to need to help our students with this. I understand why a lot of schools don't always implement this, because it is time consuming. It does require a lot of planning on part of the teacher. It does require multiple one-to-one conversations. But once that first process of getting students to create that reflection and those targets and those steps is completed, it becomes easier the next time the students have to do it. So that's so very important. And of course, you'll need to help the students formulate those steps. It could involve reading through and taking notes on the resources on Google Classroom, using the textbook more intensely. It may involve watching some YouTube videos, for example. It may involve using the revision guide more often. It may involve increasing the number of hours of study time prior to a test. Each student will have their own steps to take, but you as the teacher can certainly help the student think about those steps. So that's very, very important. And of course, on top of that, we should be the bastions of good mental health and well-being for our students as well. There's going to be lots of students who you'll teach over the years, and they'll be really upset when they get a low grade in a subject. And as teachers, we've really got to encourage those students and remind them that it's just one test. This is a learning journey. Use this as a tool for improvement. Don't beat yourself up. Don't feel depressed or feel anxious or worry about it. The key thing is to find out what went wrong, figure out how to fix it, formulate a target for the next test, and work towards that target. It's so important we do that. And of course, when students do succeed and they do achieve really well on these tests and assessments, we should recognize that. We should recognize attainment. And a big thing that we should do is we should recognize progress. Very recently, I had a student who scored really low on their first assessment. On their second assessment, it was still quite a low score, but their percentage had increased by over 20%. What a massive increase in progress. So that has to be recognized as well. We shouldn't just focus on the final grade or the final attainment. Let's recognize progress as well. How far has the student come since last time? And again, that requires good vigilance on the part of the teacher. It requires good monitoring, tracking, and just really having that motivation and drive as a teacher to praise our students when they make that progress, and to recognize good effort, good attainment, good progress, and to keep encouraging our students, really. And that's really everything to do with feedback when it comes to tests and assessments. It's so important that we have this mindset, and we develop the mindset in our students that tests and assessments and exam style questions are tools to help you improve. It's adopting this growth mindset, isn't it? This mindset that this is stage one. This is what I've learned from stage one. What's stage two? What's stage three? What's stage four? It's remembering that this is a journey and encouraging our students to remember that they are also on a learning journey. So I do hope that was helpful, everybody. Please do feel free to comment on this podcast episode. There will be a question in the show notes if you're on Spotify. And feel free to email me if you have a topic request. My email address is info@richardjamesrogers.com. Once again, that's info@richardjamesrogers.com. And why not check out my blog for teachers, which has hundreds of articles on there at richardjamesrogers.com. And also, why not check out my best-selling, award-winning book for high school teachers called The Quick Guide to Classroom Management, 45 Secrets That All High School Teachers Need to Know. And the Amazon sales page for that book is linked in the show notes. Thank you so much, everybody. Until next time, bye-bye for now.